a little bit of what you might call a perpetual motion machine of machlokas, because not only has the machlokas endured for about 135 years or so, but clearly it's got its roots much earlier, but in its current form, machlokas has gone on for more than a century, like a century and a third, but it's not just that it continues, but that the elements are there to renew and refuel the machlokas constantly. That there are aspects that have to be reevaluated based on changing realities, and therefore that gives both sides of the debate enough ammunition to say, okay, whatever you held 7 years ago, or 14 years ago, or 28 years ago, now everything's totally different. In which direction, whichever direction you want to maintain, but there is enough to work with to say that this machlokas has to keep going on forever. So it's unfortunate. We'll try to get a little bit of perspective on that as well. But at least to try to begin with, let's try to get a little bit of background about what the issue is. Just in terms of the basic history, the late 1800s, so there was a question as to what was going to happen with the Yishuvim, the settlements that were around in the land of Israel, the pre-state era, so several decades before there is a Jewish government. And there is a tremendous concern that, as it is, these times are very challenging, the economic conditions are very daunting, and it was hard enough to survive as it is. But the idea that you could take a year off of working the land and not produce anything and still survive, that seemed very questionable. And therefore, there was a discussion, could there perhaps be an approach that would allow the letter of the law of Shemitah to be observed while still allowing the land to be worked? And there was a plan that was promoted by some very distinguished rabbanim, Shmuel Moholiver, who was well known for his involvement in the early days of religious Zionism, Shmuel Zantel Patfish, Shul Mikutno, the author of Yeshua's Malko, and a few others came forward with this heter, which we'll discuss the structure of in a few minutes. And it was approved by the Gadol HaDor at that time, our namesake, Yitzchak Chaim Spector. And despite that backing, was very controversial. It was very controversial then. At the time, there were those who felt it didn't matter who was behind it, it had to have the support of all of Klal Yisrael because it's so significant. There were those who felt that Yitzchak Chaim must have been misled, he must have only been told some of the story. Yitzchak Chaim himself did write that he was very anguished by the extent to which the matter caused controversy. And as we said, it's a controversy that didn't just end there. So we'll have to figure out a little bit what are the parameters, what are the aspects of this debate, and how exactly do they play out. So before getting to the specifics, we'll just talk about some of the broad parameters and some of the broad issues. We should also mention that in addition to the names that we just noted, so one of the most prominent names associated with Hatzimahira was Rav Kook. Rav Kook wrote extensively about the Hatzimahira in his Sfarim and his Tshuvas Mishpat Kohen and in his Sefer Shabbos Haaretz. But he was not always in favor of it. And in his earlier years, he and his father-in-law, who was known as the Aderes, they had both opposed the Hatzimahira when they were living in Europe. And it's only once he got to Eretz Yisrael he saw exactly what the conditions were like. He saw just what it was they were dealing with, that he came to a different approach, and he wrote in support of it, but he also wrote that he's not sure if he wants to go into detail about explaining what the story is, because he's afraid that it will become permanent, that this will become the standard for how Shemitah is observed, and he didn't want that to be the perception, he didn't want that to be the practice. And that conflicted attitude a little bit it symbolizes what it is we're looking at in terms of this ongoing tension that you find with the Hatimachira. So, what is the Hatimachira? So, in short, it's based on the idea that land in Eretz Yisrael, if it were to be sold into non-Jewish hands, would then not be subject to the prohibitions of Shemitah. That's very broadly put. So, there are many details that we have to figure out. But we should first note that the foundation of the whole plan is coming from the assumption that Shemitah nowadays is midrabanan. If you didn't feel that Shemitah is drabanan, so then it's very hard to really talk about any kind of a hatimachira. If you do feel that Shemitah is drabanan, then you still might not necessarily accept hatimachira, that's for sure. But without it, you don't really have much of a discussion. So why would Shemitah be drabanan nowadays? Right, if you open up the Chumash and Parshas Behar, that was the first Mar Makom this morning. So it sounds like the Torah is pretty clear about giving a commandment to Shemitah. So why would we say Shemitah is Drabanan? Any thoughts?
Because Yovel is in the Hagen as well.
Okay, so one possibility is that it's connected to Yovel. We assume that Shemitah and Yovel are intertwined. So it seems like Yovel is not Noahig today. It's a discussion that Gemara has in Maseches Erechin. It's also on the list. So, if that's the case, so you may have heard that the idea that Shemitah is Rabbanah nowadays is limited duration, and that any moment now, we're going to tip the scales to where most of the Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael, and Shemitah is going to be Daraisa. Have you heard such a claim? So, it's not clear that that's really the case, because if you say that it's because of Yovel, so yes, the Gemara talks about population as the factor for Yovel. The Gemara talks about a standard of Kol Yoshevel, that the Jews have to be living in the land of Israel. But there also, the Gemara says, really it's Kol and not Rov, it has to be everybody. And also, the Gemara has a requirement which is even harder to, or maybe harder to, establish that the Jews living in Eretz Yisrael have to be living in their assigned plots, in their assigned portions, and where the shvatim are set up. And if they're not living there, then this whole status doesn't apply. So even if it's true demographically that we're about to hit the point, or we've already hit the point, where more than 50% of the Jews in the world are residing in the land of Israel, from this perspective, it doesn't look like that's really going to change things. The other possibility is that maybe Shemitah is tied into Trumas and Maisras. In the context of Trumas and Maisras, so the assumption is that those are Daraisa only when you have Bias Kolchem, when you have all of the Jews returning to Israel. And from that perspective, it could be true that Rove might be enough. But, as some Achronim point out, it presumably means a Bia Rov. It means that most of the Jews have returned together. Not that there's a trickling of Jews one at a time, one family at a time, and one flight at a time, and it shifts gradually over to 51%. But if there was a mass return, and that return included most of the Jewish people, then that could trigger a restoration of Trumas and Maisras and Lev and Menachot. So it seems like if you maintain that Shemitah is Rabbanan today, then that's probably true for the foreseeable future. And I'm imamim b'emunah shleima that Mashiach can come at any minute. But as far as what we're looking at al pi derech hateva, it looks like that's the situation that we're in right now, that it's going to be the case. Now, there are those who disagree with the whole premise. There are those who maintain that Shemitah is Daraisa, even nowadays. Rosh Hashanah, He's one of the very vehement opponents of the Heter. So he has a sefer where he essentially attacks every single detail of the Heter Mechira. So one of the details that he disagrees with is this assumption that Shemitah is the Rabbana. He actually assumes that it's a Sveika Ladina and that we have to be Machmir, we have to at least be concerned about the possibility that Shemitah is Daraisa. But again, maintain that Shemitah Darabanan is a necessary ingredient, even starting this conversation. And that's true for reasons that are general as well as specific. So, for example, a general reason, a hashkafic reason, there are those who will argue that, look, it's great that you feel you're having a hard time here, or it's terrible that you feel you're having a hard time here, but that's nothing new. The Torah already said that you're going to be daunted by this, you're going to feel this is challenging. The idea that it seems difficult or undoable is not a new reality. And yet, the Torah says, you saw the Pesukim this morning, you can see Visi, Esberfasi, the Kodesh Baruch Hu promises that there's going to be surplus, there's going to be enough, there's going to be extra, and you'll make it through. So, some maintain that how could you say, all right, now I have a crisis situation, we have to rely on some type of plan here. What about the fact that the Torah already said Shemitah is going to be hard, and God says, I'll protect you. And that the idea of emuna has always been central to issues, especially about agricultural concepts. Gemara Masechta Shabbos in the Flamed Gimel. Gemara characterizes all the different sdarim of Shas by different parts of the pasuk. Emuna sitacha chosin yeshuas. So chachmas vedas. So emuna sitacha. So the Gemara says emunas. That's the reference to Zrayim, that in order to be able to fulfill the mitzvahs involving agriculture, so you have to have a munah, you have to believe that you can take a leap and it's going to work out. And therefore, that should be the case here as well. Nothing new in the late 19th century. So to that, some of the, just to mention what the response was, and then I see I have a few questions. So there were those who argued that, yes, this is true. Kadosh Baruch Hu made a promise. He made a promise when Shemitah is Daraisa. So he said, okay, here's the din, follow the din, and I will compensate. But if Shemitah is not Daraisa, if we're taking upon ourselves to observe Shemitah, so then maybe we have the right to assume that we have Kadosh Baruch Hu's promise, and therefore we have to address it in the means that we can. And this ties in a little bit, hashgraphically, to a topic we've touched upon in the past, that there might be a fundamental difference between Dinim and HaTorah and Dinim Yidrabanan, and that Dinim and HaTorah reflect absolute realities, while Dinim Yidrabanan are more about not rebelling against Chazal. So if we're not rebelling, so then that might be enough. And if we have a system which the letter of the law is addressed, that might be enough on a level of HaTorah, and maybe that's, or considering that it's Drabbanan, and that might be the proper approach. That's how it was debated. So I think we had, I guess, first Aryeh, then Sammy, then Yitzi?
Yes,
Rabbi. Okay. Same. Okay, very effective. Yitzi, you win.
Isn't it Mefurash in the Sukkim that Shemitah is Daraisa?
Yeah, so it certainly starts Daraisa. The only question is, what happens under certain circumstances when you don't have most of the Jews living in Eretz Yisrael? So does that change either because Yovel is affected by that, or because Shemus and Isis are affected by that, and is Shemitah theoretically tied into either part? We'll also discuss another possibility that maybe the Kedusha of Zaharis or something like that is Drabana, and maybe it's tied into that. So there's no question that Shemitah as a concept is in Torah. The question is, do the circumstances today address the situation that the Torah is talking about? Okay. So fine. So on a broad meta level, the question of whether it's Daraisa or Drabana affects the attitude towards the whole concept. An additional meta consideration, perhaps, is the question of how do you approach the philosophical issue of harama. Now, how do you translate harama?
Trickery. Subterfuge.
Trickery, subterfuge. Okay, so it's good to see what you get when you try to translate that, because I think you both gave kind of judgmental translations. So they may both be accurate, but they're both kind of judgmental. And the word harama has both connotations. Sometimes it is judgmental, and sometimes it's more value neutral. And sometimes we find that the Gemara tells us, the Gemara will recommend under some circumstances, the Yavin, that here's a mitzvah for whatever reason that you should avoid the situation. So let's say we'll translate it right now as evasion. And evasion, again, is sometimes judgmental, tax evasion, and sometimes it's more judgment neutral, that sometimes there is a way that doesn't necessarily carry any negative connotations of kind of sidestepping the din for whatever reason you have to do so. So in general, there's a philosophical question of how do you feel about something which is essentially a harabadik? It seems like here we have a straightforward din min haTorah or min drabanan, and we're getting around it. So if everything else worked, let's postulate for a moment that everything else was good, is it appropriate, is it right to avoid the din this way? So it's interesting, it'll just take a moment to consider the whole question of the, I guess you could call it the Judaism story, the place where dinim are sold and lechiras are employed. Right, so we have a number of areas where we find mechira plans, and sometimes they're widely accepted, and sometimes they're not widely accepted. We used to tell a joke a few years ago, the RCA came out with a psak that smoking is prohibited. So there had been a joke before that the Orthodox Jews, they're not worried about any rabbinic ruling saying smoking is prohibited. They'll just sell their lungs to a non-Jew. So, why do you laugh at that? Why do we know that we sell our chametz to a non-Jew? So, what's the difference? Right? So we perceive right away that there is a difference. It's not exactly comparable. And we can understand that there are some types of mechira that maybe accomplish something, and there are some types of mechira that don't really seem like they can accomplish anything. So we have a range of mechiras that you find in halacha, and they have different degrees of controversy. So, for example, in the Gemara Maseches Bechoros, in the beginning, the Gemara talks about selling a bechor. I'll explain what's going on. Selling the parent of a bechor. I'll explain what that's referring to in a second. And that's the din of the Gemara. That's what the Gemara tells you to do. And on the other hand, with the other extreme, so we have this het mechira or shmita, which is so hotly controversial. And in the middle, we have Mechiras Chametz, which is controversial. We spoke about it a little bit last year. It is certainly the topic of a lot of intense debate. But nowadays, it seems to be much more broadly accepted, even though not 100%, it seems to be much more broadly accepted than the Hektim Mechira is. So what's the difference between all of these? So there are some major differences we'll get to. In the case of Hattat Mechira, there's some major components that don't really apply to the other things. But we'll focus now on general issues. So in the context of Mechiras, the Hinam of the Karas, you have an animal that's pregnant, is about to give birth to a firstborn. So the Gemara tells you to sell it, at least partially, in the very beginning of the Sechet Bechoros, that you should enter into a partnership with a non-Jew, because there you're really essentially stuck, right? That if you have an animal that's a bechor, so the animal's going to be kodesh, and what are you going to do with it? So you can't fulfill the dinim b'zman hazeh, but then you also can't use it either. So you're going to be stuck. So in order to avoid that situation, so Gemara says you have no better eitzah but to try to get around it. So therefore, sell part of the animal to a non-Jew, because if you're partially in partnership, you're in partnership in the ownership of the animal, so then it's not subject to bechor.
Hi. Does that apply today?
Yeah.
Do people do that today?
It is done today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it is
everywhere.
So Sorry?
Everywhere in the world that does it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is done. You know, we don't tend to have animals that it's relevant to, so we don't see it happening. But if you were a farmer, then you would have to tell stories about people asking questions, and he says, he should do the same thing you do in the first Chameis, and then, which part they're more familiar, which part less familiar, it depends on what kind of rabbin you have, whether it's a more common question or less common question. But yeah, that's what's done today. So there, again, that's not controversial, because that's the exhibit of Gemara, and that's a situation where you kind of have to. So that's a harama that's not going to be judgmental. But what about in other areas? So why is it that, let's say, to compare Mechiras Chametz and Mechiras Karpos, and the Mechira, so why is it that, as controversial as Mechiras Chametz is, which definitely is controversial, but it still seems to be much less controversial than Hetz and Mechira? So why is that? So, yes, the factor that there may be a certain Yisurim that are relevant here, we'll come to, that's one major thing. But even before coming on to that, there are other issues.
It's a much longer period of time.
Okay, so does that matter? Is that significant?
Yeah, because maybe you, if you say that one of the, you know, the aspects of Shemitah that are most important is that there's an aspect of faith.
Uh-huh.
And you are, you know, contributing to your relationship with God by, you know, having faith that He'll provide for you. If you don't do Shemitah, then you will be missing out in some, to some degree.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying the longer that you're practicing this, it's just basically a quantitative accrual of issues, that every day that you're living like this, you have a little bit less opportunity to express faith, and then as it racks up. So
I mean, it's like, I would say something like the Shabbos act.
Mm-hmm.
So, like a lot of people, a lot of poskim are saying that's completely also.
Mm-hmm.
So, what would happen if, like, hypothetically, the Shabbos app were, you would, you know, be able to do anything on your iPhone on Shabbos. It would take away completely from Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Shemitah. Shemitah is the seventh year, and it's supposed to be sabbatical. You're supposed to be giving the ground rest. Then this is a way to completely circumvent it.
So that's the haraba component that bothers people. That's
right.
Definitely true. But let's also just try to put a little bit of a finer point on why it is that this bothers more people than Salmi Chametz does, which also, again, bothers people, but this bothers more people. So I think there are at least three reasons, and we'll say more about some of these reasons. There are three ways in which a comparison between the two favors Mechiras Chametz. And by pointing this out, I'm not coming to disparage Hetz and Mechira, as we'll discuss. There are great Gedolim who endorsed it. That's not the point of this whole discussion. But just as far as understanding it, I think it's important to note that there are at least three ways that I see that the comparison favors Mechiras Chametz, and that's separate from the Yisurim that we'll talk about in a little while. So one way is in terms of the seriousness of the sale, which is a big point that we'll also come back to. So let's say at the end of Pesach, the purchaser were to come to you and say, listen, I'm interested in keeping all your mummies, and I'll write you a check to cover the value of all the chametz. So probably, I think it's safe to assume that most of us would say, all right, you know, I didn't want to throw away all my money, all my value, but if you're going to cover the cost, you're going to pay for it, I'll take your check and keep the chametz. But let's say at the end of the Shemitah, if the Arab purchaser says, okay, I have from the Bank of Saudi Arabia a check here for $50 billion, and we'd like to keep the land of Israel, so I hope the answer would be, we're not interested. Sorry?
That
would depend on you, so. Okay. But I'd like to believe that we're not going to be interested. So from that perspective, it seems there's a little bit less seriousness to the sale, and we'll come back to that point in a few minutes, or eventually, about the seriousness of the sale and issues that are connected to it. A second point, this is also pretty significant, is that, let's assume when I talk about selling chametz here, that we're talking to a balabas, a chametz consumer, not somebody who is doing business with chametz, or certainly if you have, let's say, a supermarket that's open over Pesach, I'm not talking to that context, but let's say the average chametz consumer who sells his chametz on Pesach, so he doesn't have anything to do with that chametz over Pesach. So you put the chametz in the cabinet or in the garage or whatever, and you lock it up and you tape it over, and over the course of Pesach, you have absolutely nothing to do with that chametz. It has completely been removed from you in that sense of the word. But in the case of the karkos, so the land continues to be worked. That's the whole point. The whole reason you're doing this is so that you can continue to have a connection to the land and its avodah. And therefore, that's a pretty significant difference from chametz. A third...
Gosh, is that related to seriousness of the sale?
Yes. Well, in a sense, the first point related to a little bit more. For now, I'm going to put it all into this category of the propriety of the whole thing as far as the haram is concerned. That, you know, how far are we straying from the Torah's intent and how comfortable can you be with it? Let's put it in that category. You see?
On Pesach, when you sell your chametz, if you own a store, you're not taking part in
the store. Store issue is much more controversial. So I'm not actually going to address the store situation right now because that involves many other things. But let's just say the average consumer, if you're a balabas and you eat chametz, so of course Pesach, you'll sell your chametz and you really will have nothing to do with it. It'll be completely removed from you. And that's not exactly the case when we're talking about Shmita's karkos. A third issue, and this I think is very significant, and people don't always notice when they lump them together. I should mention, by the way, that there were great gedolim and such as Shulam Kudno, who felt that they deserved to be lumped together. That when he supported the Het Mechira, he said that it's no worse than Mechira's chametz. We'll mention other positions like that as well. I think it's possible for one to feel, clearly it's possible for one to feel that they are both acceptable. Clearly that is the case, that they were felt that they're both acceptable. But especially if you want to criticize it, so it's worth noting that there are significant differences. So in terms of this harama issue, so in the case of Mechiras Karkos, so the Torah says, don't work the land, and you're selling the land so that you can work the land. So that's really a harama, in that you're doing the opposite of what the Torah says. In the case of chametz, so the Torah says, don't own chametz, and you're selling it as a different way of not owning. So we could debate whether or not it's good enough as far as the Torah's commandment not to own chametz on Pesach, but it's not the opposite of what the Torah says. You know, it would be more comfortable if the Torah said don't eat chametz on Pesach, and we decided that if we sold the chametz, we could eat the chametz that belongs to a non-Jew. So that would really be a harama in a closer sense. Or like the joke we mentioned before, if you sold your lungs and then smoked, so then that would really be getting around what we're talking about here. But as it is, in terms of owning chametz, it seems like it's a very significant difference that you're not doing the opposite of what the Torah says. This is what is considered to be an alternative venue. Is it enough? Okay, that's where the controversy lies. But it's not doing the opposite, and therefore, as far as haramas are concerned, it's from a very different place. So I think those comparisons all work in favor of Mechiras Chametz. But there are a few points you can make in favor of Het Mechira as a way of saying, well, like Rav Shulman Kudna said, that if you're okay with Mechiras Chametz, you certainly should be okay with Het Mechira. So what might those be? Why might I say like that? What kind of logic is that to say that if you're okay with Mechiras Chametz, you should for sure be okay with Het Mechira? You see?
That Mechiras Chametz is dealing with Torah Ezra.
Right, so it seems like if you accept this assumption that we described a few minutes ago, that Shemitah nowadays is Drabanan, So then, okay, so Mahatma Mechira is only addressing a Din Darabanan, and Mechira's Chametz is addressing a Din Daraisa of Bayi Rabbani, let's say. Which, by the way, is why there are people today, many people, who are only comfortable relying on Mechira's Chametz for Chametz Darabanan, and don't sell absolute Chametz, don't sell Chametz Darabanan. We spent some time a few years ago before the last week cycle trying to get a clear report on what Rav Soloveitchik's approach was towards the Hetz Mechira. I got the conflicting indications. I couldn't get a very clear representation. It happened to be that the original Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, the Beis Halevi, was one of the very vehement opponents of the Hetz Mechira, as was his Kodesh Yeshiva, the Netziv. So certainly, going back a few generations in the Soloveitchik family, it was a very strong opposition to the Hetz Mechira at the time of its original proposal. But the more recent branches of the family, it's a little bit less clear. So in terms of the Soloveitchik, what he held, he saw different things, but one statement they saw was that the Rav had told someone that if you're going to Eretz Yisrael, the question was asked, is, should he rely on the Hetz Mechira? So that the Rav said that, do you sell your chametz? And the answer was, yes. So he said, if you sell your chametz, then all the more so, you should rely on Hetz Mechira for a drabban. You sell your chametz as deraisa, then all the more so, you should rely on it for the drabban. So from that perspective, the comparison works in favor of Hetz Mechira. And it kind of highlights the point. This whole Harama question is dealt with differently for the races than they are for the Rabbanim. So it's a little bit of a Hashkafic question, that if you maintain that the races are more fundamental and more absolute realities, while the Rabbanans are more about not rebelling against Chazal, so that might explain it, or it might just be a function of severity, but however you come to this conclusion, there is what to say about a general Harama concern that we're more ready to accept it when they didn't involve the Rabbanan than we are when they are the Daraisa. So parenthetically, again in the Chiras Chametz, so you find those who will rely on it only when they're dealing with Chametz Darabanan. Or there is also a trend in Achronim, which is not our discussion today, that says that for practical purposes, our Valyura Valyumatze is Darabanan, and that's why Mechiras Chametz works. And why that is the whole other discussion, but there is such a path of thinking. Hi.
Would we consider Erevin Haram?
So Erevin also worked because we're dealing with Darabanas. For the most part, there are Erevin that work for the Raisas, but the Erevin that we use nowadays, in most cases, not everywhere, but the Erevin that you normally see with Surah Sapasah is because we're assuming that Hatzah is the Rabbanan in these places.
So then the concept of the Rabbanan as being rebellion against violating the Rabbanan and being against the Chazal seems to be the dominant one because Erevin is a Sahel. Like we seem to decide according to that aspect of the Rabbanan instead of realization of the vision of
the Daraisa. Anyone was in terms of our Ksubas discussion
yeah.
about that? I don't think it's one or the other. I think there are different types of Rabbanans. And they have different reflection components. I think that's a little bit of a longer discussion. But I don't think we necessarily have to say it's one or the other that's going to be a slam dunk proof. But the Erevin point is interesting, though, that it's true that the standard Erevin that we see are working off the premise that Chotzah is a Drabbana in those contexts, but that's not 100% the case. Okay, so assuming that we're dealing with Drabbanas is a major part of that component as well. Now, is there anything else that favors Hetz Mechira in this comparison? Any other reason to say, well, if you hold from Mechiras Chametz, you should for sure hold from Hetz Mechira?
Maybe it's in the material it's a little bit easier to control and use because less people are involved in it.
It's interesting, but it's probably not the case, though. There certainly are logistical issues that are part of the conversation, so that's definitely a legitimate thing to bring up. But I don't know if in practice that's actually the case, that part of it. Right?
Very similar to that, though, is that it's easier to survive without wheat products, without chametz, over 7 days of Pesach, but it's not so easy to survive for a year without any parnasa.
Okay, so that's really the issue. The issue is meat. Right? And that also goes to the whole thrust of Harama discussion as well, right? That is how necessary is it? That, and especially also if you track the history of Mechiras Chametz, there are those who argue that when Mechiras Chametz really caught on 300-400 years ago, so we were talking about Jews who their whole parnasa depended on their not throwing away their whole inventory of chametz, and they really would have incurred tremendous financial loss. But nowadays, so if you're going to have to throw out the half-eaten bag of pretzels or the half a box of cereal that you have in your pantry, what's the big deal? Okay, that's not so terrible. So that factor with need is very significant, and that might be a legitimate way to consider the question. And then you still don't have a final answer. That throws it back into the whole controversial issue of, okay, so what exactly is the need? How do we assess it? Is it possible for us to make it without this? So we mentioned the Soloveitchik a few minutes ago. So a few weeks ago, somebody told me, somebody who was close to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik told me that Rav Aaron had said that he thought that the whole viability, the whole acceptability of the Hatz Mechira really hinges on one question, one issue. Is it necessary? If it's necessary, then it's a legitimate approach, and if it's not really necessary, then it's not a legitimate approach. That assessing this question of just how important it is going to be the whole question in his mind. So again, that leaves a ton of room for controversy, because clearly there's a whole lot of subjectivity in assessing whether it's necessary or not, but it could perhaps boil down to that question. And in terms of our Gemara in Bechoros about the Mechiras Bechor, right there, it's Daraisa. It's not a question of Daraisa or Rabbanan, but the issue is necessity. There's no Eitzah to deal with this situation, so therefore you have to do that. And maybe here, it's arguable whether necessity exists or not.
And what would Rabbanan say about Mechiras Chametz? Because then it's not really necessary and you're messing around with Daraisa.
Yeah, he might say, and I actually don't know what his view is in Mechiras Chametz, if I just have to speculate. So if that's the only consideration there, then it would seem like it's not absolutely necessary. Although the other factors that I mentioned, who knows how much weight you're really giving to those. I mean, I'm sure somebody knows. I'm sure many people know. I happen not to know right now what the weight is you would give to those factors. So theoretically, it's not a straight Kal v'chomer in any direction because of all these variables. We're just trying to explore in the abstract that if this was the only issue, why would you go a Kal v'chomer from one way to the next? So again, we see this assumption that Shemitah is Drabanan playing a huge role, right? So either the question of whether the Hashkafic Baracha of Shemitah is applicable, that is affected by the question of whether we're dealing with the Dereis or Drabanan. And we see here also the general question of Harama, and whether it's appropriate or not, is also affected, not exclusively, but largely by the question of, are we dealing with Daraisas or Drabanans? We also find other impacts to this whole Drabanan question. So, for example, if you had a chance to see it, put it on the list this morning, there is a Gemara in Sefer Sanhedrin, Daf Chavav, where the Gemara talks about the situation where there was great economic pressure on the Jewish people because of a tax that was levied on them, and they had to raise money in order to pay it. And they were permitted to work the land during Shemitah in order to be able to pay the tax. So it's the whole discussion. There's Rishon, the Tosfos over there, and others who talk about what exactly is going on here. Was it Pikuach Nefesh? Is it that the tax was so burdensome that essentially it was a do-or-die situation? Or was it simply great monetary pressure? What exactly justifies it? So the Rishonim over there discussing that Gemara, that's a part of it there as well, is the assumption that Shemitah is Drabbanan in that context? And therefore, when there's great economic pressure, is there any leniency to take a different approach? In that case, it was talking about really violating it straight out, it seems. So this would seem to be better than that. This would seem to at least be working the land in the context of an attempt, at least, to make it more halakhically defensible. So that would seem to at least be better from that. But that, what that Gemara is addressing is a big part of this discussion. There also is a view, just to mention a few other components, of it being Drabbanan. So there are those who also note that there is a machlokas, if you look in the Rambam, so there is a machlokas among the Rishonim, the Rambam talks about, as to how exactly you count the year of Shemitah. So there were those who said, all right, so let's say that we're also not sure what year is Shemitah to begin with. So maybe we're not even sure, for example, this year now that we're treating Shemitah, so maybe we're not really sure that it is Shemitah. And if that's true, maybe we can be lenient based on Sfeika Drabbanan. Now, the Beis Halevi was extremely against this approach. The Beis Halevi, as we mentioned before, against the whole halach, but he very much disagreed with any premise that would say that we have a suffix as to what Shemitah is, and we could be makel based on that. And he said quite the opposite, that if you really want to incorporate suffix into the decision, we'd actually have to be machmir for all suffix years, and that would clearly be a much bigger deal. So
this is
a Beis Halevi. I think we've discussed here in the past, we're talking about this year, about the Ran and Sochen, we didn't, but in general, you can't, it seems like the Rishonim, essentially, that going into the details now, it seems like the Rishonim established that you can't say something through a Bana Lekula to make a din disappear. But if you have a din that's Drabbanan, and you say, well, I don't know if it's A or B, so Suffolk Lekula, I'll say it's none of them. So that doesn't really work. You can use a Suffolk Drabbanan to apply a din leniently, but to say, okay, I have a Suffolk in each candidate, therefore it disappears, that's not an acceptable usage of Suffolk Drabbanan Bahakil, and you might find quite the opposite that we end up having to do with the years, or if the candidates, whatever the issue is, if the candidates are all equal candidates, you may have to be machmir on all of them. So essentially, basically, we said, don't go there, it's not gonna work out well for you.
I forget where it says this, but isn't there a Gemara that said, that talks about someone who's lost in a desert and doesn't know which day is Shabbos?
Yes, there is such a Gemara. So how does something play a role there?
I'm saying, doesn't it over there, you just eventually start counting.
Yeah, there's a machlokes where to count from, and how exactly you handle that, and whether that's comparable there to the suffix of 6-7. Whether or not that's comparable, and what exactly that did reflect, is an interesting question. It will take us outside the scope. It's a fascinating sugya to see if we can find the context in which to discuss it a little bit more. But another component that was also brought up is, should we say as follows? Should we say that there is a view in Rishonim, the Balamor in Gittin, that says that Shemitah nowadays is not even Drabbanan? That Shemitah nowadays is a Midas Chasidus. So, alright, so don't seem to paskin like that. But you could say that it's a Das Yachid. And that if we're in a situation of Shasat Chak, that there is an approach in Halacha that you can rely on a Das Yachid in a situation of a Shasat Chak. So put that into the mix also, and we'll say that there is a possibility that Shemitah is not even the Rabbanan, it is only a Midas Chasidus.
What makes this situation of Shemitah a Shasat Chak?
So that's certainly the whole opening premise here, that the great economic pressure is such that we're having a hard time surviving without it. So you could disagree with the premise, and that's a part of the whole machlokas.
But every 7 years, it gets less or less.
Gets less or more, as we'll see. It depends. You could say that, I mean, just, you know, we'll discuss it more clearly. We have to continue this topic into next Sunday, but just give a little bit of a preview. So you could say that, again, a perpetual motion of Shikha Machlokas, because no factor is absolutely clear in which direction you want to take it. So you could say, listen, if we were worried then about a few families, about a few Yishuvim, and about their future, all the more so we have to worry about, we have the whole Medina at stake. Now we really have the established Jewish entity that could teeter on the brink. So there are those who will take the opposite approach and say that nowadays we have an even greater economic concern. Another flip side is that they'll say that if your alternative to head to Mechira, again, well, I'm kind of getting ahead of things now, we'll just mention it because we're bringing it up now, because I don't think we'll get to the topics today, we'll have to continue next week. But if the alternative is you're going to go buy Arab produce, so the consequences of that, for all of our Zionistic values, are going to be much greater. If you're going to be mechazek, the hands of the Arab population, so that theoretically could contradict the number of Yisodos that we're trying to defend in the context of Shemitah. But one can argue, especially nowadays, if we're in an active state of terrorist war, and that the economical considerations of who's going to be profiting here is going to tilt the scales in that direction. So then you could say, now it's a much greater shas attack that we should be self-sufficient with our produce and not be forced to go to Arab sellers in order to get our food. Remember, there was an article, so it was for last week, 8 years ago, there was an article in the Jordanian Times saying about how excited the Jordanian farmers are for the upcoming year. They know they're going to get so much more business than they otherwise do. For all the machmirim, who are not the ones who had the machira, are going to come buy from them. So a great boom that is their economy. So one could argue that that's a much greater concern in 2014 than it was in 1880. Maybe yes, maybe no. But again, you have the substance here to have the strong focus any direction you want to go. So in any event, that we were saying a second ago, so there is this, maybe this Das Yachid, that Shemitah is not even a Rabbanan, that it's a Midas Hasidus. So there are those who argue. Yosef Engel has a discussion about that, I think we mentioned before. Yosef Engel was also a proponent of the Hetz Machira. He wrote about it in one of the volumes called Otsros Yosef. So there is perhaps that sniff as well to also bring in that the Hetz Machira is a little bit more acceptable because Shemitah is actually just Amidas Hasidus. Now clearly if you say Amidas Hasidus, then you can certainly understand why one might not feel that the bracha of the pasuk is really relevant. You could have made a case that, okay, Chazal, Kadosh Baruch Hu endorses whatever Chazal do, and that if there's a bracha for the Din D'Oraisa, so there's a bracha for the Din D'Rabbanan as well. But it would be a much harder case to say that somebody's completely without obligation taking this on upon himself, that okay, you should rely on the promise that the Kadosh Baruch Hu has given. So Kadosh Baruch Hu will say, I didn't promise you anything, just like this on your own. It's very nice, it's great that you want to try to maintain the Torah Shita, but you know, how could you expect that that's going to come with a promise? So that was also a factor that was brought up. There are those who argue on both sides. There are those who argue that actually that it's not a Das Yachid, and that there are a few other Rishonim who have a similar approach, maybe it's even a little bit more than a Das Yachid, and a stronger point to rely on. And there are those who argue the opposite way, and to maintain that it's not even a Das Yachid, and that the Baal HaMor didn't actually mean that. The Beis HaLevi, again, was of this opinion, that the Baal HaMor's position was said relating to Shemitah's Ksafin, that Shemitah's Ksafin is Amidas Hasidus nowadays, but the Shemitah's Karkos continues to be at least the Drabbanan. So actually, if you think about it, you could maybe see why that should be the case. Why should there be a different mechanism as far as Shemitah's Ksafin and Shemitah's Karkos, as far as Chazal getting involved? The truth is, the Gemara says, and Sav is getting over there, so the Baal Mor is, the Gemara says that the concept of provable was workable because Shemitah is the Rabbanan. And then the Gemara has a question based on that. The Gemara says, which by the way may be another example, if you view provable as kind of a harama. So there again, the Gemara is basically saying that the reason provable works is because Shemitah is Rabbanan and therefore it's viable. So the Gemara asks, well, how could you have Shemitah the Rabbanan? How could you have Shemitah Ksafim the Rabbanan? So essentially, you're telling me that I borrow money from Sammy. So Shemitah comes and says, I don't have to pay him back. So if it's Daraisa, okay, so fine. We understand how the Torah has the ability to tell me I don't have to pay him back. But if it's Drabana, so Chazal are coming and telling me not to pay Sam back, so I'm going to be in violation of the Sigzal. Right? So I owe him money. What right do Chazal have to come and tell me that I should steal from Sammy by not paying him back? So you could hear that, all right, maybe I believe Shmita's Ksafim is a Midas Chasidus, that if Sammy wants to decide as a Midas Chasidus that he's not going to ask for the money back because Shmita passed, all right, fine. But for Chazal to say I shouldn't pay him back, that's a little bit more problematic. While when it comes to Shemitah's Karkos, we don't really have a problem with Chazal saying that we shouldn't work the land. It doesn't involve the same kind of issues as you have by Shemitah's Ksav. So those are some major discussions, major factors that come into play specifically based on the premise that Shemitah is Drabana. Now, how exactly does that get brought in to the meat and potatoes of the discussion of how the Hetz Mechira works? So that, I guess, we'll have to pick up with next week and to take it from there. Just to quickly review what we spoke about. So we spoke about the major controversy that has continued to boil about whether the Hetz Mechira is a valid approach or not. And we just basically noted that the working premise to begin with is that Shemitah is Drabanan, either because it's connected to Yovel, and Yovel requires Kol Yoshe Alav, or it's connected to Trumas and Isris, and that requires Bias Kulchem, and both of those factors are not so likely to change with simple demographic adjustments. And therefore, if Shemitah is Drabanan, that plays a major role. So why does it play a role? So we've talked about what about the Bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises help with Shemitah, so it could be that only applies to Shemitah's Daraisa, maybe not when it's Drabanan. We discussed the question of Harama, is Harama appropriate? Maybe it is for Drabanan, maybe it's not for Daraisa. We compared Mechira's Hamis to Pet Mechira. We talked about three Cheshbonos where we thought that Heter Mechira's Hamis comes out better than Mechira's Karkos. But on the other hand, two ways in which maybe Hetem Mechira's Karkos is favored because we're dealing with the Rabbanan as opposed to the Reis, and we're talking about that a little bit, the Gabi Chametz, or because of Tzorech, and maybe it's more of a Tzorech to deal with this economic crisis than it is to sell the Chametz. And we also talked about the Gemara and Sanhedrin, how that factors in, and about the Aruna, and we talked about the question of whether you could be desirous of this whole issue of when Shemitah is and say something to Rabbanan, and how the Beis Halevi thought very much not that way, he thought the opposite. And then we talked about this question about there being perhaps a Das Yachid as a Baal Amor, that Shemitah is not even a Rabbanan, it's a Midas Chasidus. And how does that help? And we noted that there was a machlokus on both sides, those who held that it was more than a Das Yachid, and those who held it was less than a Das Yachid. The Baal Amor was only talking about Shemitah's Ksafim, and not Shemitah's Ksafim. We talked a little bit about why that might be, why it's easier to believe that the Shemitah's Ksafim has a problem being a Drabanan. It's kind of got to all be all or nothing, while Shemitah's Karkos could more easily be a Drabanan. So tomorrow, God willing, we'll continue with Ksubis, a discussion of Shakir and Emes, and we will continue this topic, as Hashem, the following Sunday. All right, everyone should have a